Alrighty, thank you everybody for coming. I will call the Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency Board Meeting of November 13th, 2024 into session. Linda, can we have a roll call at your convenience?
Certainly. Board Member Reynolds?
Here.
Board Members Kimbleshue?
Here.
Board Member Conan?
Here.
Board Member Doyle?
Here.
And Chair Tuschinski?
Here. Item two is the consent agenda, which is a single item. It's an approval of the minutes. And if you don't mind, turn on your mic so the folks at home can hear.
You, Chair Tuschinski? Yes, so in the minutes, it looks like that first, under the consent agenda, there's two voting. It's just essentially a duplicate on the minutes. I went ahead and updated that. So as you can see, if you go on, I think page four, for the consent agenda, we have Director Reynolds on there, which she was not there. So that has been updated, and the updated minutes have been posted on the website.
Great. Anybody have any other comments or corrections?
I would move the corrected minutes.
Second.
Great. We have a motion from Director Kimbleshue, a second from Director Reynolds. At your convenience, Linda.
Thank you. Board Member Reynolds?
Aye.
Board Member Kimbleshue?
Aye.
Board Member Conan?
Aye.
Board Member Doyle?
Aye.
Chair Tuschinski?
Aye. That passes unanimously, and we move on. Oh, I'm sorry, public comments. Members of the public may address the board at this time on any matter not already listed on the agenda. Comments are limited to 3 minutes. The board cannot take any action at this meeting on requests made under this section of the agenda. Does anybody in the
crowd? I have one.
Yay.
Richard Kuhn.
Great. Mr. Kuhn, please.
Hi there.
Hi.
A happy rainy day, especially for the Vina GSA. We just need more. What's happening with the fee study? You know, we have not heard. We would like to hear. We would like to be engaged. And just keep prodding you a little bit that you need to do better engagement with us. And then the last question is, why on one of our 40-acre parcels that has never been irrigated, never had a well, never pumped a drop of groundwater, are we being charged in this year's tax bill the same as a 40-acre orchard that, by our calculations, uses roughly 13 million gallons of groundwater per year? And that's I'll go back and sit down, but I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Absolutely. Well, that actually isn't for me to say on either of those accounts. So I am going to turn over to Cammy and Dylan for that, because they can give you the update on the fee schedule. And then they also can tell you who to contact for the question about your acreage.
Well, you're the contact. I've already contacted you. I'm contacting all five of you right now.
Yes, we are. Richard, just so you understand, we are a governing board. We're not a management board. We have a management team that actually takes the policies and implements them. So you've let us know, and you've let our management team know, and there may be somebody within the management team who's the particular person for that. So,
but you still have a vote. The five of you still vote. You can't get out of it.
Oh, I'm not trying to get out of anything, Richard, but I'm just trying to explain for the second point that you made, which was specific to your property. Okay, great, fantastic. So we can get an update on the timeline, and then the other elements from Dylan. And okay, Dylan is the one on this hot seat. I'm handing the hot seat to you.
All righty, I'll take it. All righty, Richard, no, I totally understand. It's been a couple months since we've talked to the rangeland folk people. We've been doing a lot of other outreach with different stakeholders within the sub-basin, including our domestic well owners. We currently have a fee study survey. So that is another thing that we would love for you to actually share. I have some cards, if you could share that so we can get your thoughts, because I know that you also are around a lot of other people. So if you don't mind sharing these surveys, that would be great. We're going to be having at the December 11th board meeting, we're going to have our consultants from Hansford's Economic Consulting, who are going to come here, and they're going to talk about the different funding mechanisms. We're also going to be having them present at the SHAC meeting next week, so Wednesday, November 20th at 9 o'clock at the library. If you want specific questions with them, but I do acknowledge that we had you in that one meeting. We've been trying to do the different stakeholder groups. But if you have a specific question like that, I'm happy to take it as well so that I can work with the management committee and our consultants to get that answered for you.
Great. Good.
I'd like to add on to that. And Richard's not the only one who has come to me and asked, why is my rangeland being charged the same as Orchard? I thought we had talked about this. And the answer is, we're still working under the old agreement where it was a uniform charge across the board on every acre in the Vinus Subbasin.
Correct.
That's correct. Okay, so that's why your tax bill is the same as it maybe was a year ago. We are working to change that. And, you have my commitment that we are going to look very strongly at changing how non-irrigated lands are charged. We'll leave it at that.
Great. Thank you for adding that. I appreciate that. Great. Are there any other comments, Linda, that you got? Anybody else from the crowd? Nope. Then we will move on to the regular agenda item tonight, the presentation and discussion of draft proposed new monitoring network locations. And we have from Ryan Fulton and Dylan Rainey.
All right. Good evening, everyone. I'm Ryan Fulton with LWA. Also here tonight is Laura Boglia. She's online, and Eddie Tisdale with Ludorf and Scalmanini Consulting Engineers. Let's see, are you able to bring up the presentation? It's not showing, yeah.
It's not showing, so.
So as I go through my PowerPoint, feel free, any directors, if you have questions, feel free to ask as we go through. So I'll be talking about the proposed monitoring network enhancements for the Vinus Subbasin. I'll review the project objectives, review the existing groundwater level monitoring network, and then touch on different aspects of the enhancements that we're proposing, and end with the schedule and next steps. Next slide, please. Okay, so the goal of the monitoring network enhancements is to address data gaps identified in the VINA GSP and DWR's determination letter. We will be monitoring all beneficial uses and users of groundwater, including interconnected surface waters, or ISWs, groundwater-dependent ecosystems, or referred to as GDEs, domestic well owners, and agricultural users. I'll spend a lot of tonight talking about the first two, interconnected surface waters and GDEs. We have available funding through the grant that the Vina GSA was awarded to install a minimum of 9 shallow wells, 1 multi-completion well, install 3 stream gauges, and equip 8 domestic wells with monitoring equipment. Next slide, please. So this is a map directly from the GSP. It shows the existing groundwater level monitoring network within the Vina Subbasin. There are 78 wells located across 59 individual sites. The network provides groundwater conditions across the principal aquifer. The problem with this network is that it does not account for different aquifer layers. It assumes the groundwater aquifer is essentially one big storage reservoir, and groundwater levels go up and down based on the conditions. In reality, there is an upper and a lower aquifer layers that may be separated by impermeable layers, so the clay layers. And so we don't know much information about the vertical movement of groundwater within the aquifer. So we're proposing to develop a shallow monitoring network that can be used to monitor ISWs and GDEs and shallow domestic wells, and also a deep monitoring network for monitoring where most of the pumping is occurring. And one last thing before I switch slides is there's this red circle on this map. It's a data gap that we've identified within the existing monitoring network, and I'll reference that later, but just wanted to point out that there's a gap in your monitoring network kind of to the west of Chico, north of Highway 32. So next slide, please.
Can I ask you one real quick question?
Yes.
So when we were developing our plan, we chose to have the monitoring network work with polygons as opposed to just a strict radius thing.
Yeah.
Partly, I think the idea was to address some of what you're talking about trying to choose the conditions that are mm-hmm. kind of comparable within that polygon area. Yeah. Are you saying that that idea might need to be refined because we may have chosen the, for lack of a better word, boundaries that aren't consistent with that? Or is that, again, is that part of the data gap itself? Or do we need to reconsider our monitoring network in that way?
Yes. So our intent with the monitoring network is to classify wells based on the screen intervals and how deep they are with respect to kind of the geology underneath. That polygon approach does not account for the underlying geology. It just, my understanding, and Eddie can correct me if I'm wrong, he's familiar with the existing network, those polygons, but that is just used to calculate like a change in volume, a change in storage. And so those, you guys are assigning one representative monitoring well per polygon. So we're really trying to look at, okay, where are the wells screened, which interval, and is that reflective of the upper aquifer or the lower aquifer? Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, yep, you're welcome. So we partnered with Dr. Todd Green and Ludorf and Scalmanini consulting engineers to classify wells that are part of the GSP monitoring network as either shallow or deep. He used well information from and DWR AEM surveys. The figure on the right shows a typical aquifer cross-section across the Vina subbasin. And it's reflective of the geology. If you look at the figure on the bottom left, there's that yellow line. That's the flight path that the aquifer cross-section represents. The blue colors on the aquifer cross-section or represent clay soils or soils with low permeability, and the red or the warmer colors represent sands and gravels. And so we've defined the shallow aquifer as the Q1 and Q2. And so that layer is typically 100 feet below ground surface. And then the deeper aquifer being the Tehama and Tuscan formations. Next slide, please. So this is the proposed monitoring network for the upper aquifer. A few things that I want to point out to you. On the map, there are model streams from the Butte Basin groundwater model. And from those, you can identify streams that are gaining, mixed, or losing. Gaining streams are streams where water from the aquifer is moving into the stream, so it's gaining groundwater. And losing streams are streams that are losing water going into the aquifer, and then mix transitions between those two from gaining and losing depending on the time of the year. So on the map, the blue represent gaining, yellow represents losing, and green is mixed. And that can be used for assessing where ISWs are. Groundwater dependent ecosystems, we pulled that coverage from DWR. It's called the Natural Communities Commonly Associated with Groundwater. It's a coverage that DWR has released to GSAs to help inform and manage groundwater for these groundwater dependent users. And that's the green shaded regions on the map. So through the analysis that Todd Green and LSCE performed, they've identified 13 existing shallow wells that were included within your GSP. Our goal is to install an additional 17 shallow wells across the sub-basin pending funding. As I mentioned earlier, the GSA has funding to install 9 wells across the sub-basin. And so those blue circles represent areas where we would install those 9 wells. Before we go out and drill, we'd like to utilize existing infrastructure. Why drill a well if there's already a well there that we can use? So the city of Chico has nitrate wells that are shallow that could be used if they're within one of those circles. CSU Chico, Todd Green has some wells, it forms a transect across Big Chico Creek that we could use as well. And we've talked with friends of Butte Creek, and they have some work along Butte Creek where there might be some opportunities to leverage some of their wells. So to the extent we can leverage existing infrastructure, that frees up more funds where we can drill wells elsewhere. And that's the blue, or not, sorry, not blue, the orange squares on the map. So as we're able to fill with the blue circles with existing wells, we'll be able to drill where the orange squares are on the map. The one multi-completion well is shown on the map. It's M1, it's the pink hexagon on the map. Where I pointed out earlier where that data gap was on the monitoring network within the GSP. Can you go back? Yep, thanks. We're proposing to install an additional 11 stream gauges. The SGM grant that you received will pay for a minimum of 3. It won't pay for all 11. and I'll touch on it a little bit later, but there's DWR has released another funding opportunity that we'd like to get your feedback on this evening, whether or not it's worth pursuing. And that can fill those other stream gauges. So on the map, the stream gauges that we're proposing to install under the SGM grant are the red circles. And then if you decide to pursue the CalSIP funding, those would be the purple gauges. Next slide, please.
Ryan, I got a question if you go back to that.
Yep, go
in your expert opinion, do you feel that by drilling those additional wells that are not within our budget, I guess, would that add any additional data that would be helpful to us? Do you follow what I'm saying?
If we install all the wells that we're recommending, would that be sufficient, essentially?
Yeah.
Well, I think right now we just don't know much about the ISWs and the GDEs. So as we install these wells, we're going to learn a lot. And that may present other data gaps down the road. And so it's not a solution that may be, you know, do once and you're done the rest of the time. You might learn from this and then identify additional data gaps.
So no, the more data we have, the better.
More data you have is better now. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to make one clarification just because I think the wells are already going to be paid for by the grant. It's the stream gauges that are not covered necessarily by the SIGMA.
Yeah, the shallow wells.
Okay. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, the 9 shallow wells in the blue circles, those will be paid for by the grant. We have funding for 9 wells. So to the extent we can utilize existing infrastructure to address those data gaps, those blue circles, that will free up additional funding that we can start addressing those orange or squares on the map.
Which are the stream gauges?
Which are additional shallow wells.
Okay.
So that's what I'm trying to figure out too. Is this the math isn't my strongest subject, but so you say that 9 are paid for.
Yeah.
Optimally, we would have 8 more beyond that to add up to 17.
Yes.
But some of that 8 could be from existing infrastructure. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yes. And one of those creeks or waterways that you have mentioned, there might be a place for stream gauges. It was pointed out to me that it's Comanche Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not that it's a big deal, but Comanche is spelled wrong, but that's okay. I'm not a good speller either. So that I'm glad someone who was a better speller than me pointed that out. But Comanche Creek is really an irrigation canal. Right. And I don't know if, Ryan, you're aware of that. So, and the reason I say that is that gate could be shut off at any point in time. It's not really a seasonal creek. And so I don't know that that would be a representative example of a waterway.
Yeah.
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it can also be used for recharge projects. So some of these gauges were recommended for the purposes of recharge projects.
Okay, you're saying even though it's not a actual seasonal creek, that it's actually an irrigation canal.
It could be used for
recharge. It could be used for recharge.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Makes some sense. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So this is, this slide provides an overview of the proposed stream gauges as shown on the previous map. For each site, we've identified whether it will benefit ISW, GD monitoring, groundwater recharge projects, or water budget and refinements to the Butte Basin groundwater model. As you can see on the map, the green shaded cells represent the benefit for that stream gauge. And so all the stream gauges would benefit ISW and GDE monitoring to some extent. Same with for water budgets and refinements to the Butte Basin groundwater model. Through discussions with the recharge team here in Vina Subbasin, Geosyntec and Land and Water Solutions, we identified a few stream gauges that can be used for recharge projects and their efforts. So sites labeled SG1 through SG4 are tentatively to be installed under your existing grant that you have. Sites labeled SG or CS1 and through CS7 are tentatively to be installed under the CalSIP funding if you choose to pursue that funding. The state, as I mentioned earlier, the state has opened up this funding opportunity for GSAs and water managers to pursue to install stream gauges. They have about $7 million in this pot of money to install gauges. So as before we leave, we'd love to get your input on whether or not you want to pursue that. But we'll circle back once we, a little bit later when I show costs and that kind of thing. Next slide, please. So LWA conducted a domestic well survey using parcel classifications available through the county's assessor's office. As shown on the map, each green dot represents a parcel likely to have a domestic well. We excluded parcels within Cal Water and Durham ID as those are likely served through those public suppliers. Through this analysis, we've identified priority areas to priority areas with the highest density of domestic wells. These are the locations where we would like to monitor. As I mentioned earlier, we have budget to install equipment on 8 domestic wells. And so we have begun to solicit volunteers willing to give us access to their domestic wells to install the equipment. And so to date, we have 14 volunteers that came forward and allow us to monitor their wells. These are shown on the map with the purple diamond shapes. Since we don't have budget to monitor all 14, we're going to go through a process to rank these wells and select the wells that are most representative across the subbasin while focusing on these priority areas with the highest densities. Next slide, please. Okay, so we would like to install continuous real-time monitoring on all the new monitoring sites. This will allow the GSA managers and well owners the ability to view data online data will be automatically sent from the field to online to a dashboard where folks can log in and see their groundwater levels or stream flow data in real time. So this slide just presents costs for doing that work. There's an initial installation cost, and then there's an ongoing O&M cost. Once you install it, you have to maintain it. And that includes routine maintenance, going out to the sites, their solar panels out the sites, you know, dusting them off, making sure the battery is good, that kind of thing. And then their electronics, and so they fail after, you know, somewhere between 5 to 10 years. And so you have to replace sensors over time. And so the grant will cover the initial installation costs with the ongoing O&M kind of falling on the GSA. So for groundwater level monitoring sites, the initial installation cost is between $65,000 to $11,000 per site. It varies on the types of sensors that you would use. Is it a multi-completion well? If there's three casings and you have three sensors, so you'll have a higher cost. The figure on the right, it's an Eno Scientific sensor. It's a non-contact sonar sensor. These are commonly used for domestic wells, so you're not having to lower anything down their casing and potentially contaminating the water for that. So we recommend we use those all the time on domestic wells and have pretty good luck with them. The figure on the right is a submersible sensor. We use these probably more than the Eno, but you lower them down the casing and they measure the amount of water above. So a different type of sensor. And with these sensors, you can also measure electrical conductivity. So you can get a measure of the water quality for that well.
So is the 11,000 figure more leaning towards the Eno one, or is that not the determinant?
The 11,000 leaning towards the submersible transducer for a multi-completion well with three casings.
Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Enos are on the lower end, about 65.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. For stream gauges, the installation cost is up to $35,000. It's dependent on the site, right? typically for natural streams, you have to develop a stage discharge relationship. So you have to go out there, manually measure flow at varying flow rates and relate that to the water level in the creek. So there's quite a bit of manual work to develop that. So you have the equipment costs and then the labor for developing those ratings. It's site specific, and there's other cases where maybe there's a weir or orifice gates that would require less effort. But in general, for budgeting purposes, as we'll see on the next slide, I've been assuming the max about 35,000 per site. For ongoing O&M, stream gauges are a little bit more expensive because you have to go out and maintain that rating over time and making sure that that is accurate moving forward. So we're budgeting between 4,000 to 8,000 per site per year to maintain those sites moving forward.
4,000 to 8,000 per site
per site,
year.
Per year on average. Yeah. And
I want to get in that business. Just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What? No, wait. Ooh, do. We will have a public comment period where you'll be able to answer questions. So we're not going to have people from the audience just shouting out things. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Okay. Next slide. So this table summarizes installation and average ongoing O&M cost. It lists by location. So for the 8 domestic wells that we have funding for, the initial installation cost will be about $56,000, with the average annual ongoing O&M cost being about $12,000. Some years it can be far less when you're just going out, just checking the solar panel. Other years it could be more if you're having to replace the sensor. But on average, it's right around $12,000 to maintain those all 8 sites. For shallow wells, we've budgeted for 9 sites, $63,000 for the installation cost. And again, the installation costs are fully funded by the grant. The average ongoing in 13.5. Multi-completion well, 11,000 with ongoing O&M 2,000, and stream gauges, 140 for the installation in 24 for the ONM, and that would be for the four sites that we're proposing to improve under the SGM grant. And then the optional gauges to be improved under the CalSIP funding, if you choose to do so, installation would be at 245 with ongoing ONM 42,000. The one thing about the CalSIP funding is it doesn't require you to maintain the sites. You can get the funding and have it operating for 1 year, and that would satisfy the grant terms. And you can abandon the site after you're done with it if you want to. Ideally, we would keep the sites going for at least the useful life of the sensors, 5 years, so that the O&M cost could drastically be reduced during that if you're just trying to maintain the sites for those period. So there's really low risk to the CalSIP funding because the grant terms are so relaxed in a way.
What is this? Is 5 years, for lack of a better word, a sweet spot in terms of getting the data that we need? I mean, ideally, we would have tons of wells and we'd monitor them forever. Yeah. But in terms of filling the data gaps, what is that sweet spot for us?
Yeah, the 5 years for the stream gauges, that is the point where you would start to see equipment failing and your cost to maintain the sites going up. When you write the grant application, or when we would, you would want to say, you know, the GSA is willing to commit to maintaining these sites for X numbers of years. And so our recommendation would be, well, let's put 5 years in at relatively low cost because you shouldn't have any equipment issues within that period. But that will still help the application look better, be more competitive to the other applications that DWR will receive. And that you guys are willing to maintain the sites for a few years beyond what the grant is requiring.
And I just want to confirm real quick, Ryan. So that would be DWR would pay for the installation mm-hmm. and then 2 years of maintenance.
Yeah, the grant goes till 2027, into 2027. So realistically, you probably wouldn't get the gauges until, you know, middle of next year. So you have 1 year of data, essentially.
So potentially we would be on the hook for 4 years of maintaining these, the stream gauges.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think this is a good point for me to interject a little bit. So I think today I wanted to talk to you a little bit of the strategy of where the GSA is going. Cause this, I think we've been trying, I know from what I've learned of the GSA and being in it, we aren't in the business of trying to make just get money to get money and to do stuff because we want to. Generally, we also try really hard to get grant funds. We like to have a lot of our work funded so that we can ease that for the taxpayers. I think that strategically we have to see, is this something that we would want to do in the future anyway? Because those initial costs are what's going to be the most for us. And if we could have them pay for it in the beginning and we get all of this data for a very, you know, pretty good price tag in comparison if we were paying it all for ourselves, I think then we should really consider taking them all. If we don't, and we're like, we don't ever want these stream gauges, then it's, oh, okay, that's a way for us to go. I think it's also a way to look at us getting potential funding in the future. And I see getting these stream gauges now as a really good investment and a good return on our investment, because who knows what other funding is going to be out there, but this is here now. We'll have, you know, we're already going to be finishing the other projects. A lot of them are feasibility studies. So this is kind of a good next step and for potentially other product or projects. So what does the GSA want to do? Do we want to continue forward of just being, we're just going to comply with the law. We don't necessarily want to do projects, which a lot of GSAs can do, or do we want to take a little bit more active, role in that in projects. So I think this is kind of where that discussion can start, especially on something that's a little less, you know, it's not a huge commitment. It seems like a big number, but over the next 3 years, it's, I think, an extra $51,000. So it's about $150,000 commitment that we're making over a 5 year period. And that's just the high. Am I right on that?
Yeah, for if you install all the monitoring at all the different locations, you're essentially committing to an average annual O&M cost of about $93,500.
Yeah, the 150 is the strain gauges. My apologies. Thank you for that.
When do we have to make this decision?
So they're taking applications on a rolling basis. Our hope was that we could apply for the end of November. Our last chance to do it is next month, though. So we'd have to either make that decision now or at the upcoming meeting on the 11th next month.
Okay. Thank you.
Forgive me if I'm jumping ahead in your presentation, but could you quantify the benefit? What is exactly the bang for the buck that we'd be getting for spending this? For our edification and particularly for the others who are paying the property taxes and wondering where their fees are going, that might be helpful to explain what we're going to get out of this.
Very good question. And it's a hard question too. Hopefully the stream gauges can lead to projects, like actual implementable projects where we can get water into the ground. It's hard to know how big those projects are to quantify that, but there's a benefit there, right? And then just for addressing the data gaps, we'd love to show that, ISWs, GDEs, they're being met. Their needs are being met within the sub-basin. And through this monitoring, that will help show that. So it's hard to quantify a benefit to that, but it's more of qualitative. But that is a benefit that we can expect to get from that. I don't know the results, obviously, but we'd like to use that data to show that.
And do you also expect that it'll help quantify the sustainable yield? Made a decision as a board based on the expertise that we got from others and the preliminary information we had, as well as models. Yeah. So is this going to help us know kind of exactly what our deficit, or at least closer to what our deficit is?
Absolutely, yeah. And this can fold into refining the Butte Basin groundwater model, further calibrations of that, which would lead to better and more accurate estimates of sustainable yield.
Great, thank you.
I'd just like to add the stream gauges are also a lot very helpful for when it comes to doing the GDEs and for doing the urban forest. So that's something that we're particularly interested in. That's something that stream gauges will offer, is that data too.
Yeah. And one thing that I would mention kind of along those lines, but the stream gauges, one comment that we received was, well, let's measure the amount of surface water that's coming into the sub-basin through these streams and then how much that's leaving. And so the stream gauges will help quantify that. That's, we have that kind of embedded in where we are placements. Yeah. I think it jumped back there. Okay, perfect. So schedule for the next coming months. We presented to the SHAC last month, provided an update there. We're here tonight, providing you guys an update. It'll do one more round with the SHAC, one more round with you guys for final recommendation and approval, respectively. As far as next steps, we need to work on getting access agreements into place and getting a few well drillers on board. And we're hoping to have well drillers under contract by February of next year, with the new wells installed by June of 2025. Stream gauges can start as soon as we get approval from the board. We'd like to get monitoring equipment installed and start measuring flows, especially this winter as we start seeing the higher flows. We can capture some flows at higher flows for the stage discharge curves that I was talking about earlier. And then if we'd like to move forward with the CalSIP funding, that needs to be submitted by December 31st. And so that's a near term.
Our hope today is that the board could either approve the management going forward with the application, or provide other direction on how you would like to or cancel it out, or even discuss some different options. I'm sure that we don't have to go for all seven, I assume.
We don't have to go for all seven.
So that's kind of some help that either we can leave with some direction to go fill out the app or to go apply for the application. And then if so, how many stream gauges would you like us to apply for?
You mentioned a rolling application period. Is it a rolling approval period too? So if, in other words, if we applied this month, we might actually have an opportunity to get the funding by December 31st, even though that's technically the end point of application, or they not operate that quickly?
It's a rolling application and they're awarding too at the same time. So, I mean, it'd be great if we can submit sooner. We can get submit this month if you guys give us the go ahead. And then we'd have maybe an answer before the end of the year. Just depends on how DWR responds.
Great. No, thank you. That's kind of the part of the kind of a corollary to Director Kimmelshue's question about when we need to make a decision that helps us shape. So thank you.
I sort of understand, Dylan, when you need an answer. Okay, sooner the better, basically, is what you're saying. And I'm all for it. Okay, I'm going to kind of be a cheerleader here. First of all, as a county supervisor, I want this county to be the best county in the state of California. Okay, and I'm willing to do what it takes to do that. Also, I want this GSA to be the best GSA in the state of California. And I think the more data we have on streams, on groundwater, on deep aquifers, on shallow aquifers, I think that gives us the data we need to make decisions that we need to make. In saying that, we do have a really strong group of intelligent people on our SHAC. And I think we put that SHAC in place for them to make recommendations to us. And I'm just hoping that at our December meeting, that sounds like they will have a recommendation. I know you'd like to get started on the grant writing. And that would be for the CalSIP grants. Is that right? But I would feel a little more comfortable, and I think I know what the SHAC is going to say. But until we have a recommendation, that's just respecting them and the work that they do for us. Hmm.
How specific does the application need to be in terms of the locations? Because I, again, just extrapolating, I have a feeling the SHAC may have that degree of a comment for us, as opposed to saying, yes, seven stream gauges are great or 11 stream gauges are great. I have a feeling that that might be the detail level. So if we were to tonight just conceptually say we like you to apply for the numbers that are here, and then for the final recommendation, hone it. Would that be possible, or does the grant require that literal list that you provided in one of your slides?
Yeah, so the application, it's multiple rounds. There's like an initial, it's like a one page, just a letter of interest, essentially, where you can show the locations, unfortunately. So we need to have some detail on which sites we'd want to include. But then once you submit that, DWR will have a follow-up and they'll request more information. So it's a process with different rounds, but we would need the locations.
Got it. And the locations etched in stone as opposed to ink with whiteout or pencil?
Just general locations. Like if we just had the circles, you know. Yeah.
Okay, great. No, thank you so much. That's just.
Yeah.
Cool.
All righty. Well, we have a SHAC meeting next week, so we can get that explicit, get their consensus on how they feel about the CalSIP.
But I think you could start. If you have time.
Are we on the last slide of the presentation, or is there more that we are waiting on? Oh, the questions. Well, what do you know? We were right at that point. Great. Well, are there any other questions from board members at this point, or should we open up to the public questions? We know there's this one.
One's a comment, one's a question. I think you answered there really is no downside to taking the CalSIP money. Sometimes by taking other monies, we have our hands tied. So it sounds like there's no downside. I just want to confirm.
Yeah. There's really no downside to strengthen the application. We can say, well, the GSA is willing to take on maintaining the sites indefinitely for 10, 20 years, or we could say 5 years, or we can say 1 year. That's the requirement of the grant. So maybe some feedback there, where what level of commitment you guys would like to take on in the O&M of the sites. If you have any feedback there, my recommendation would be 5 years.
I don't see the point in doing it if we don't do at least 5 years. I mean, otherwise, what kind of real data are you going to get? Because this is going to be going in the middle of a rainy season for some, and then some of it's not even going to be installed until next summer. So it's going to be a year and a half, 2 years before we really have data. And my other question on that, or not comment, is just, I remember us being beat over the head, almost literally sitting up here when we were working on our GSP, because everybody's saying, well, you're not doing enough and you don't have any. And we just kept saying, well, we don't have the data. We're making the best decision that we can based upon the assumptions. So if we are going to be able to have actual data so we can know whether we're on the right track in what we're doing, I think it's important that we at least look at it, and doing it for a little while. That being said, we have a very, very, very small budget, and a lot of it's going to legal fees. So to commit to spending a lot of money on monitoring something when we don't know what the income is going to be and all that, of course, we have to, you know, look at that. But I like it. I thank you.
Okay. But again, just to understand, just to make sure again, I'd rather ask the stupid question five times than misunderstand. The commitment though of the grant, even if we say in our grant application, we're planning on doing 5 years or 10 years or whatever, they aren't going to say that we're in violation if we, after year two, stop, because their requirement is only 1 year, regardless of what we pitch. Is that correct?
It depends on how we frame it, and we'll look at the grant agreement.
Okay.
Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah.
Well, I just want to make sure, because again, we're talking about looking ahead to the financial implications. Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. All right. So if there's no other questions, oh, please, Steve.
In your professional opinion, I want to kind of follow the trend here. We need as much data as possible to make the decisions.
Yeah.
In my opinion, in your opinion, how long do we need to have these, how many years of data do we need to make the educated decisions that we have now? I mean, is it five years? Is it 10 years? You obviously need wet years, dry years, and normal years.
Yeah. So especially as we're starting to, you know, look at these shallow monitoring network, deep monitoring network, do we want to make these new wells an RMS well for setting MTs and MOs and GSP? We're not going to have enough data by the end of the grant to establish those. But we can at least say, well, we've developed this framework for a monitoring network for the 2027 update of your GSP. And then the 5 years later in the 2032 update, then we can start looking at, well, let's define MTs for these new wells, since we'll have more data at that point.
Okay.
So that the answer.
And then to the CalSIP, if they're going to be providing the money for the equipment, I just want to make sure that once that period is over, whether it's 5 years, 3 years, 1 year, the equipment is owned by the GSA. So we can service it, keep it up as long as we want indefinitely, but it is owned by the GSA.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think I'm good.
Okay, great. So if we could open it up to public comment, and I know there was at least one question, and again, sorry to have cut you off, but please come on up and then. Oh. do you mind coming up just so that the people at home can also hear you, because you're contributing to the conversation? That was all that I meant about yelling out from the audience. I knew you weren't literally yelling, but.
Well, I too was a little shocked by that 35,000. So I wanted to say, you mean for each one, you know, but I think it's a great idea. And I was in another meeting earlier today about the, you know, the recharge along Lindo Channel. So I'm wondering, do any of these stream gauges, can they be used to monitor other things that are being considered right now in our GSA? Our GSP, wait, is it the P or the A?
Yeah.
Anyway. And so that's my question.
Wonderful. And,
the money. Yeah. I thought that we have to come up with all this money here, or the state is going to give us some of the money.
Great. They'll clarify that when we answer the question. Do you mind giving your name just so we get you correctly in our minutes next month?
Yes, Susan Schrader.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Susan.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So those are very good questions. So if you don't mind answering those, that would be great.
Okay. So I'll start with the last question. Does the GSA have to pay for it, or will it be state funded? The answer is state funded. Everything will be paid through grants that the GSA has received. In regards to the Lindo Channel project, could you maybe bring up the shallow monitoring network map? So we met with GeoSyntech, and Joe Turner recommended that we drill some shallow monitoring wells where it says S9. It's along Lindo Channel, just to the west of 99. So that site came from him. So we would like to, we're developing this monitoring network for multiple purposes.
Great. Thank you so much. Yep. Anybody else from the audience? Okay. Mr. Kuhn. And then I'm sorry, the gentleman in the gray cap, I don't know your name, but I'll look forward to you coming up afterwards.
Hi, my name is Richard Kuhn, and I have a couple of questions, actually. The first one is, who's going to own the data, and is it going to be available to the public? Is the GSA going to own it? Is the engineering firm going to own it? Am I going to be able to get the data for our farmers that live near the monitoring wells? So that's my first question. Who owns it, and can the public have access to it? And the second question is more of a reflection. It seems like 100 years ago, I made the suggestion that we empower a citizens monitoring group. Is there any chance, like you go on your phone to see the air quality in a fire and you're purple air, and you can buy a purple air transmitter and put it on the side of your house and it adds to the monitoring level. The Enos well monitors are not expensive. I have one. It's cool. Is there going to be a way for citizens, if they meet your protocol, to add their data to your data set? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
So first question, who owns the data? And it will vary depending on what data's source that we're talking about. For the stream gauges, the CalSIP funding requires the data to be transmitted from the site to CDEC, the California Data Exchange Center, which is a public website. Anybody can go onto it. So the public will have access to that data. For the groundwater level monitoring network, if the data is on like a private landowner property, we can give that landowner individual access to their groundwater level data, and then the GSA would have data. And so we're actually talking with GeoSyntech, I think beginning of December, on how to incorporate our data with the DMS task that the GSAs are working on. So I don't have a very clear answer where that data is going to ultimately end up. We do, to satisfy the grant, we do need to post the data to the water data library. And there might be an automated process for getting the data somewhere too. So, yeah.
But would the data, but apart from that potential caveat of a particular owner or two, would the broad picture data mm-hmm. be our agency's data? In other words, a public agency's data mm-hmm. publicly funded? Is that?
It would be your guys' data, and you do have to open it up to the public.
Right. Perfect. That's what I figured, but yep. I just wanted to clarify. Yep. Like I said, I'd rather ask the dumb question then.
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Yep. I think we got your questions answered. Oh, yes, the kind of like a crowdsourcing.
Okay. Yeah, so as part of the community monitoring program, we're going to be forming ad hoc, comprised of the public. And in that process, we're going to be soliciting input on what do you want this community monitoring program to look like. And one potential aspect could be like a citizen science aspect, where we develop an application where domestic well users have access to an app where they can just enter in groundwater level readings, and it submits it to a database somewhere, and we can incorporate that into the work.
Great. I'd also like to add that right now we're in a 30-day public comment period for the monitoring enhancement project. So even though this is going to be an ongoing project, so our hope is that we can build off of that, this public comment period, and then have more public engagement with that. So
yeah.
I just want to put that out there as well.
Great, thank you. And please come on down. I'll call you Mr. X until you let me know who you are.
I'm Christopher Chudy. My friends know me as Cheetah. I've been farming in Butte County for about 15 years. Actually, partial answer to the question is you can find a lot of the monitoring wells on California Groundwater Live. Also, Sigma Review, I think it's .com, has a lot of that spread as well. My question, and thank you, Ryan, like more data is good data. In the last SHAC conversation, Todd Green, who is obviously the most proficient groundwater hydrogeologist in our region, had concerns about the placement of the new funded wells in terms of being too close to creeks, in terms of they might not be representative of the region. I'm just wondering, Ryan, and again, thank you for your input and all your work. Have you guys looked at that in terms of stakeholder review? Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So if I understood the question correctly, is are the shallow wells that we're recommending to be installed across ISWs and GDEs, are that reflective of shallow conditions across the aquifer? And my answer to that is where, to this point, we've really been focusing on the ISWs and GDEs. There is the opportunity to incorporate other existing shallow wells, for example, the City of Chico nitrate wells that extend beyond just the just right adjacent to the streams. That would kind of enlarge where that shallow monitoring network is in place. So we're looking for opportunities to expand it across the sub-basin. We're limited on grant funds and existing infrastructure. And so we're certainly willing to incorporate other wells to the extent they're out there within that network.
If I understand Mr. Chudy's question fully, Dr. Green has been working with you. So has he raised the concern that Mr. Chudy raised about monitoring wells being too close to streams and thus you're taking that into account in these locations? Or is this suddenly a revelation that hit you at whatever time of day this is?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Dr. Green. I wish he was here. But we've had conversations with the TAC. And the recommendation was to put the shallow wells essentially as close to the stream as possible so we know what's going on underneath it. And that's what our goal is going to be. We're going to try to get access to right adjacent to the streams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you for answering. Yes, please come on up and introduce yourself and comment or ask, please.
Good evening. My name is Jim Graydon. I'm a private well owner in the basin. And the projects that you have, sort of the portfolio of projects you have, include the Lindo Channel Recharge Feasibility Study. And I think the last commenter and the first commenter spoke to the distribution of new monitoring locations as they might provide the best data going forward, the most valuable data. I think we need to take a look at what can be used in the near term. And that Lindo Channel Recharge study is near term, low cost, low risk, and high value. So I think that biasing, if you will allow me to use that term, biasing some of the well locations toward Lindo Channel to derive data on recharge, you know, tying the empirically measured recharge with the studies that the other group is doing would be very valuable. Some of the broader basin questions, recharge system wide or irrigation management and such, those are very long-term activities. I think the Lindo Channel one is immediate, well, will be immediately in front of you within the next year or so. So I would ask that you prioritize those wells.
Great. Thank you so much
Sure.
for the input. Appreciate it. Anybody else have any comments or questions?
I have a question.
Please come on up.
So much.
Yeah, thank you.
I love that all of the people were at the Lindo Chano passive recharge meeting before this. Thank you so much for your presentation. It was very clear. I just had a question. You mentioned that there's an update of the GSP in 2007, and I didn't get the second date, 2042?
Every 5 years.
Okay. The
first one's going to be due in 2027.
Yeah, so yeah, please just so the again for the people at home, I don't even see how many there are, but whoever deserves to hear.
So the first GSP update is due 2027 and every 5 years thereafter. So the following would be 2032.
Great.
Thank you. That was my question. Secondly, how will this data be included in the groundwater dependent ecosystems in the next update, or how could it be included, provided that it takes at least 5 years to get the data and the timing? I'm just wondering, can you update in between the GSP updates? Oh, and I'm Patricia Hieronymus, Executive Director of Butte Environmental Council. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So it's certainly update, it's certainly possible to do an evaluation in between those 5 year periods. But our recommendation would be to, and I, as I mentioned earlier, would be to set up the monitoring network now for the this 5 year update, and then 2032 reconsider the SMCs within your GSP at that point.
Great, thank you. Was there any other comments? Okay, then we will close the public comment period and turn it back to the board. I know that the staff has requested, and management team has requested some guidance. We've kind of given some general ideas. Does anybody have guidance they want to put in the form of a motion, or do we want to try to find consensus? Or
I don't think we need a motion, but I think that Dylan, I don't know if that, my recommendation was to take it back to the TAC, but we have to respect the TAC, and we have to respect the fact that it's their job to make a recommendation to us, and then we can act on that recommendation. Was that clear enough, or do you need questions to other answers?
I just wanted to make one clarification. We're talking about the shack, right? Not the technical advice.
Shack.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yes. We will. Yes. Your direction is clear. We'll get that from them next week, and we'll come back in December.
Yeah. And I would just impress on them that this board is looking to them to come up with some recommendations for us.
Do you want us to talk about options of if we were to do all seven, or if we should consider maybe only doing 4 or 5? Is that something you would like for us to discuss with the shack as well?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are we comfortable as a group waiting to apply for the grant until December, or would we like a letter of interest, that phase of it, to go out, in which case we might need to add a little more specificity?
Well, I'm willing at this point to begin the process and the grant without the shack's recommendation. I would hope that would be the case.
So in other words, we're okay with doing that general thing. We'll get more refinement, and when we do the final approval, we'll incorporate the shack's input. Is that right? Am I summarizing?
Does that make sense, Dylan?
Yes.
Okay.
And
I don't know. I'm just.
No.
I'd rather get it going sooner than later. And worst case scenario, if we get completely contradicting information later, we can withdraw or change. But I think getting our name in there and the interest in there is important.
That's what I lean to too. I want to look on this side, and I'm seeing nods of affirmation. So
I just want to get one more clarification.
Please.
So I have. We can go ahead and start the application, but my assumption is don't turn it in until we get the final approval. Or do you want us to turn it in and then we can always say never mind if we'd vote against it?
Yeah, then turn it in if you can get it done by then. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And it sounds like, again, you'll have time to get some guidance from the shack before you turn it in anyway, unless you're a zippity-doo-dah, super-fast grant writer. It probably is going to take a little bit to get that. So by next week, you'll have that. And then we can, again, give the final approval. That?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Perfect. I just wanted to make sure we had...
Zippity-doo-dah, huh?
Yeah, well...
Oh, I haven't heard that term in a long time.
I'm old. I'm
so,
old.
So
I watch
am
old
I.
Movies.
So am I. I remember where that came from. But anyway.
Great. So do you have all the clarification you need? And
Thank you. Yes, I do.
Great. And Eddie, you have everything you need too, because you were sitting there very silently. Well, I know. Yeah. Okay, good. Eddie follows his lead. Fantastic. All right.
Nice work, Ryan, by the way. That was I enjoyed that.
Thank you. Okay, then we will move to, where am I? I'm like totally got off onto the wrong part of the agenda. I'm looking at last time's minutes and saying, well, all the things are filled in already. Communications and reports, the GSA program manager report, a verbal report from Dylan.
All righty. So I don't have too much to report back to you today. A lot of it is we've been really busy with our outreach efforts. One of those being our projects are finally online. So now you can go onto the Vina GSA website and you can go under the managed groundwater. You could look at our projects, which it will provide an overview of the project outcomes and the schedule. We're really excited to have those up. So we're also have our social medias ready. So that's really exciting. I have never posted so much in my life. Apparently you're supposed to do it like 3 or 4 times a week. It's a lot. That's what the people say. But also on our website, just because we are a government agency, we have to try and be as transparent as possible. Part of that is including board members. So my hope is in the next few months to get some profile pictures as well as just a short bio from you all, just so that our website can be pretty comprehensive, have all that information now. We have a cool website that shows us all that accessibility. So keep an eye out for that. Also, we as the fee study, we have a survey and we're hoping that everybody could share that. We're trying to reach out to everyone in the sub basin. We have sent out postcards to where we think domestic well owners are, to agricultural people. We've put an ad out in the Chico ER. So we're really trying to get that out so we can get as much engagement from different people, different water users throughout the sub basin. We're going to have our consultants speak at the next board meeting where they'll show you different fee options. And then also, for the shack, we actually have one open position already. We have the rangeland and non-irrigated representative still open, but we also have a domestic well user position coming up. So we just want to put that out there that anybody who's interested or if you have recommendations to please send them our way, go to our website, always reach out to me. But we've got a lot going on. It's been busy and we're just going to keep getting busier. We are really committed to trying to keep to improve our public engagement. We're trying to do more 30-day periods. I think that, again, I haven't even been here a year, but it seems like a lot's been happening, especially at other staff. So we're getting into a really great flow and to a routine. So just expect more comment periods, expect more outreach to them. It's really a commitment that we're trying to uphold.
Great.
And I think that's it for, and just so you know, we've already had, so we had the Lindo channel meeting today, which we thought went pretty good. We've got a lot of good information as well as meeting with the shock last week. So all the fun stuff going on in groundwater.
Great, fantastic. And the Sigma grant projects and the quarterly well permit survey stuff was informational only. So unless my colleagues have anything else, we will adjourn to the regular meeting of December 11th at 5:30 in this very chambers. Thank you, everybody, for coming.